Money Talk. This is Akashvani. In the program Money Talk, now we bring you a discussion on global economic implications of escalating conflict in West Asia. The participants are Narendra Taneja, energy expert, and Deeksha Saxena, Akashvani correspondent.
Conflict in West Asia has intensified and Israel has conducted simultaneous strikes on military targets in Tehran and Beirut. The Ministry of External Affairs of India has also issued a statement today and said our trade and energy supply chains also traverse through this geography. Any major disruption has serious consequences for the Indian economy. As a country whose nationals are prominent in the global workspace, India is also firmly opposed to attacks on merchant shipping. To discuss more on this subject and to discuss the economic implications of the ongoing conflict in West Asia, we are now joined by energy expert Mr. Narendra Taneja.
Thank you.
First of all, I would like to understand from you, the region is experiencing a lot of distress and there will be the long-term impact of this war on the prices of oil and especially on India. So how would you decode this for us? What is the long-term economic impact of this ongoing war?
Well, if you look at the region where the war is going on, in Europe they call it the Middle East, in India we call it West Asia, we have a huge, deep and very comprehensive economic relationship with that region, with practically every single country in that region, most particularly Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Oman, and of course Iran. And we have got roughly 1 crore Indians working there in all these countries. So therefore, economic independence, if I may put it this way, is very, very crucial. I mean, we are heavily dependent on that region for the supply of oil, natural gas, and some other commodities and things, and they are heavily dependent on us for many items and commodities and agriculture products and technology and services and so on and so forth. So that's an area which is very close to us, geographically speaking, and traditionally we have enjoyed very good relations with that part of the world. And if you look at the history, our economic relationship with the Middle East or the Gulf region, as it is called, is actually over 2,000 years old. And that's very integral part of our history. That said, at the same time, the challenges we are facing right now are as follows. Number one is oil. We import roughly 89% of our total requirement of oil from 41 different countries and geographies. But bulk of this oil come from this region, from Saudi Arabia, from Iraq, from Kuwait, from Oman and Abu Dhabi. And therefore, our dependence on that region is very high in terms of oil. The same goes for LNG. LNG is liquefied natural gas, which when you consume at home is called the pipe natural gas, PNG, which comes into our kitchen. And at the same time, you also use it in the form of CNG for transport, for your cars and buses and other motor vehicles. And we also source big amount of LPG, which is cooking gas, that you find in the red cylinder at home or in the blue cylinder in the commercial establishment. That bulk of that also comes from that region. Now that region is going through the kind of military challenge. It has created a lot of anxiety for us. It's not so much only sourcing it, but it's also at the same time bringing it home from that all these countries in the Gulf region into India. So our economy, when you look at India's economy, we are essentially an oil economy, and a lot of our economy consumes 5.8 million barrels of oil every day, out of which 50 lakh or 5 million barrels we import from different parts of the world. So right now it's also putting pressure on the supply. So far there is no disruption, but it's putting a challenge in terms of price, because the price of oil has gone up since the war started there. And if you go strictly only by demand and supply fundamentals, oil should not be more than $60 per barrel, but today oil is over $80 per barrel. That's a huge strain on our budget, since we import, as I said earlier, 5 million barrels of oil every day. That means petrol you buy, kerosene you buy, or LPG that you buy, or gas that you buy, actually its prices have already gone up. You may not be paying that at the petrol pump, but the fact is that for the companies, the prices of all these commodities have gone up. So it's a huge challenge for us, but so far it's manageable. Our companies are are prepared. Government has taken a number of new initiatives to source oil from other geographies, including Russia, so that the supply is continue uninterrupted. But the challenge when it comes to the price, there is very little anybody can do about it, because the fact is the oil prices have gone up. The fact is the gas prices have gone up. The fact is the LPG prices have gone up. So right now, it's a huge challenge for us. I wouldn't rush to call it crisis yet. I think it's still manageable, and the government is trying its very, very level best. There have been many emergency meetings at the headquarters of the Government of India and also the Ministry of Petroleum and Natural Gas. But the fact remains, it's a challenge. And if the war continues for longer than another, let's say, 9-10 days, I think then we'll have no option, but we will be moving into the crisis more than that would be something we should be prepared for.
Mr. Taneja, also we will decode each of the points that you have mentioned, but here I would like to first understand from you. You spoke about Strait of Hormuz and it's a choke point. It is 33 kilometers wide. So could you explain this to our listeners, exactly the geography of Strait of Hormuz, and has it ever been closed in past as well, or this is the first time that Iran is telling the world that it will shut down the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, to be honest, when you look at the map very carefully, state mode, there is Persian Gulf, as we call it in India. In the Arab world, they hate this word. They call it Gulf of Arab. And when you look at it from the north, on the north, you see Kuwait, you see Iraq. On the western side, you see Saudi Arabia. And on the eastern side of that Gulf, you see Iran. And if you come further down to the south, you have United Arab Emirates, you have Qatar, you have Oman, and you have Bahrain. And you come further south, then you basically move into the Arabian Sea and then into the Indian Ocean. The fact is, the Strait of Hormuz have never ever been closed in history. Never ever. Iran keeps threatening. They've threatened again. But officially, they have said that, look, there is no such plan. But there are pockets of revolutionary guards. They have sent a radio message to all the ships and the tankers operating in that area, including ships carrying oil for India and LNG for India. They have conveyed that, look, if you try to cross the Strait of Hormuz at this point, which is roughly 34 kilometers in terms of width, they say that we will target you. So all these tankers are taking precaution. There is some traffic still going on. So the Strait of Hormuz is not totally closed, but it's mostly closed at this stage. And the question is that Iran says that the Strait of Hormuz is his territory, but Oman says the Strait of Hormuz is Omani's territory. So there is a dispute between the two countries, but the fact is bulk of most part of the Strait of Hormuz is international water. Now, the biggest challenge is that if they try to close it, the first question is, do they have capacity to close it? Probably not. And how do they close it if they want to close it? The only option is that you go and mine it. And would the United States or Saudi Arabia or United Arab Emirates would allow Iran to do that? Probably not, because that's an international waterway. You can't close it. And most importantly, for Iran, China is a very, very important business partner. And China imports bulk of its oil from the same region, including Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Kuwait, and even Iran. And China is also a big exporter of products and other commodities to Iran. So if they close it, first and foremost, China would get very upset. Can Iran afford it? So that's point number two. But at the same time, the fact is that there's a lot of strain, and the Strait of Hormuz may still be technically open, but the fact is most of the traffic has come to a halt, and very little traffic is happening as we talk.
Also, I would like to draw your attention to one very important fact here, is that when we speak about India, this entire war, will it impact the currency of India also? And could you also explain us about the stock markets? What impact will it have on the markets as well as on the rupee?
When it comes to the value of rupee, or for that matter, any currency, the same goes for the market. Sentiments play a very, very important role. And the markets anywhere in the world, including the currency markets, they don't like this kind of anxiety. And the kind of anxiety that's being experienced across the world in commodity market, currency markets, etc. Globally is the same picture. They don't like it. Commodities markets in particular, like the market for oil or market for gas, they just hate it. They don't like it. And very often, because it's driven by perception, it's driven by anxiety, it's driven by how they look at it. It's not dependent only on deep analysis. Once you deep analysis, then you get a different picture. But right now, the markets are very anxious. And they say, what the hell is going on? I mean, is it good? And they're short. Term conclusion is not good. Let me give example of commodities market such as oil. Ideally, in this kind of situation, let's say 20 years ago, the oil prices would have already gone beyond $100 per barrel, looking at the situation. But I think market response so has been mixed. There is anxiety, prices have gone up, but at the same time, they haven't yet pressed the panic button, because the markets are hoping that this war probably will not continue longer than 9-11 days, and there will be some kind of settlement, or at least they will stop firing at each other. That would mean the Strait of Hormuz would kind of be open again, and the production of gas, Qatar will be start again, and production of oil will start again, and there will be some kind of, maybe a difficult peace, but there will be some kind of peace. But if the war goes on, then we are talking of a long drawn war, and if it's a long drawn, the oil prices will definitely go up, and the first country to get hit when oil prices go up would be the United States, because the United States is the biggest consumer of oil in the world. By the way, they're also the biggest producer of oil. So my own sense is that coming 9 to 11 days, I think we should wait. And since we are a large economy and we are also very integrated with the global economy, especially in terms of commodities like oil and gas and others, so I think it's a huge challenge for the world if they're not able to kind of bring the situation under control within 9 to 11 days. And of course, it's going to be a much bigger challenge for economies which are heavily dependent on import, such as Japan, which imports 90% of its oil, or China, which imports roughly 55% of its oil, and India, which imports roughly 89% of oil.
Now, I also want to ask you the kind of attacks which the entire region faced, and I would also like to mention that Dubai is a big tourist hub. The kind of impact this war has given to Dubai in the coming days, do you think that the industry of tourism or the hospitality industry, to say it in a better word, will it be also impacted?
If you look at the picture of the landscape today, let's say in Dubai or that part of the world, is very unhappy landscape, because hospitality industry, as you put it, the aviation sector, which is a crucial sector, which is one of the fastest growing sectors in India, one of the fastest growing sectors in the Middle East. Look at the prominent airlines. They are like Emirates or Etihad or Qatar Airways or Air India or Indigo. These are all from India and the Middle East. And these are very popular airlines. And if you look at the aviation sector, majority of airlines, when they're coming from the west and they go to the east, they fly over the Middle East and then India. So it's an extremely popular sector in terms of tourism and also in terms of aviation. So it's a major setback to this thing. I mean, imagine big airlines like Emirates grounding practically the entire fleet, or Qatar Airways, or our airlines not able to fly over that region. So I think it's a huge setback. When we talk of aviation and hospitality, the tourism, we are talking of millions of jobs. We are talking its impact on currency. We are talking impact on trade, because at the end of the day, for trade and business and joint ventures and everything, you need to move, use planes, you go for meetings and all that, you stay in the hotels and so on. So in fact, it's a huge setback right now. And if you really see the pictures coming out of Dubai, those are not very happy pictures.
Lastly, Mr. Taneja, I would like to have your closing comments on how the markets and how the stock market should be prepared in the coming days. Just keeping in mind that the war, if it may continue for 10 to 12 days, what are the precautions that we should take to be in a stable situation?
Well, I think it's still wait and watch. I don't think that markets or we should be pressing the panic button yet. Challenge, yes, but crisis, probably not yet. Number one. Number two is, I think it's important not to respond, not to go only on the basis of perception or emotions or sentiments. We should need to go with whichever sector we are in. I think we should go for deep analysis. For instance, the price of oil today has already priced in the war, has already, unless the war escalates. That is not priced in. But whatever has happened so far, that has been priced in. So we don't need to worry too much. The natural gas, for instance, the prices of LNG has gone up by 45% in some parts of the world. That again has been priced in, because LNG is a very difficult kind of product. You have gas, then you require billions of dollars to build the infrastructure like LNG terminals and all that. That's why prices are where they are today. So we should not really press the panic button. I think our economy, Indian economy, is very resilient, very strong, and is also largely driven by domestic demand. And we have very good relations with most countries that produce oil and export oil. So I don't think that supply is going to be a major concern for us. But however, if the war goes on for more than 11 days and other countries get involved in it, completely different scenario. And that will be a bad news for the entire world. But my own analysis is probably things won't really reach to that pass. I think they should reconsider and try to work for peace. All sides, America and Israel on the one side and Iran, I think they should see that it's not only about them, it's about the whole world. It's about the 8 billion people on the planet.
Thank you so much for giving us such deep insights on the subjects and joining us for Money Talk tonight.
Thanks for having me.
You were listening to a discussion on global economic implications of escalating conflict in West Asia. The participants were Narendra Taneja, energy expert, and Deeksha Saxena, Akashvani correspondent. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR, This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 928-909-4044.
Money Talk.